You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, plug-in hybrid sales pick up, migrants drive a rise in well-being, and the Australian share market rallies to a record high. All of that and more next. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Tuesday, the 5th of August, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market had a great day. The S&P ASX 200 up 1.2% to a record high, 8,770. We'll have the details with Catherine Allfrey from Wavestone Capital in a few moments, including what she's telling her clients. But first, hybrid vehicles are experiencing a period of rapid growth, contributing in part to a national new vehicle sales record last month. The Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries says more than 103,000 cars overall were sold in July. That's up 3.6% on the same time a year earlier. More than half of them were SUVs. To break it down, I spoke with Tony Webber, the Chief Executive of the Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries. Tony, first of all, what do you think drove the record July numbers? Because still for the year, numbers are down compared to the same time a year ago.
Yeah, 2025 has been a strong year up till now. 2024, which was the record year of all time, was really strong in the first 6 months and then fell off in the second half of the year. So I think coming up to July, we had that one interest rate cut. There's a lot of discussion in the community about further interest rate cuts. I think there's an underlying confidence in the market, and that's why we saw the all-time record broken in July 2025.
To what extent are plug-in hybrids gaining in popularity? Why? And how exactly is it contributing to overall growth?
So plug-in hybrids are now 4% of the market. They've grown dramatically in the last 12 months. And a lot of that's because there's more product coming online from around the world. And I think the advantage of plug-in hybrids is that you can have very low emission outcomes, which a lot of consumers are looking for, but you also have the flexibility that you can drive these vehicles as typical petrol engines on the highway. So it gives you that flexibility whilst also meeting the environmental objective that so many consumers are looking for.
And how is it in relation to those pure battery vehicles, your EVs?
So pure battery electric vehicles are much higher in sales. They're about 7.6% per month. However, we just haven't seen the growth in battery electric vehicles over the last 2 years. They've basically stagnated between 7 and 8%. And that was well below the expectations of the FCAI and the industry more generally.
And finally, generally, what kind of vehicles are Aussies demanding, and how does it compare with, you know, the kinds of cars people around the world drive?
So there is a trend around the world to move to SUVs, and we've certainly seen that in Australia. Over 60% of sales are SUVs at the moment. We also have a lot of utes in Australia. Over 20% of the vehicle sales are utes. Now, the SUV trend is a worldwide one, but we are absolutely at the forefront of this. I don't think there are many countries in the world that has as high a proportion of sales of SUVs. And the interesting thing is the passenger sedan has had an inverse decline in sales. They're only 13% of the market, which if you look back 20 years ago, that's an extraordinary outcome.
That's Tony Webber there, the CEO of the Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries. There was an interesting report out in terms of the well-being of Australians today. Lower interest rates and lower inflation helping to improve the well-being of Aussies. That's according to a NAB index. It's also showing optimism is up, with migrants leading the way. To find out more, I spoke with Dean Pearson, NAB's Head of Behaviour and Industry Economics. So, Dean, you say that optimism is up with migrants leading the way. How so, and what is it about migrants?
Well, optimism is up across the board, but yes, you're right, particularly so with migrants and particularly so with newly arrived migrants. So Australians newly arrived, so less than 5 years in the country, are dramatically more optimistic. So about one in two are highly optimistic. That compares to about one in five against the average cohort of Australians. Now, why is it so? Well, part of it might be this lucky country effect. I don't like the term the lucky country. Donald Horton didn't mean it as a compliment when he said we were a lucky country. Our prosperity owes itself to much more than that. But I do think what this is a really potent reminder of the prosperity that we have here. And maybe we lose sight of that a little bit, but clearly migrants, particularly newly arrived migrants to this country, are not, and they're incredibly positive. The only downside to it is within about 10 years, their optimism recedes back to the level of the general population. So we really do need to tap into that newly arrived cohort of people coming here who are not just uplifting our skills, but just our positivity more generally.
With one and five grandparents helping their children or grandchildren financially, that was also found in the report. What does it mean for them as they approach retirement? Because don't they have enough super anyway? Because we keep talking about this transfer of intergenerational wealth coming up.
Oh, well, I think potentially some of that transfer is happening a little bit earlier than perhaps waiting until they pass that money on in a will, for example. I think there's been so much talk that older generations are doing it so much better than younger generations. And I think to some extent that's definitely true in our research. But I think what this also shows is that grandparents and parents are really leaning in, and we ask them where that support is going. The vast majority of it is going towards just helping young people manage the cost of living and day-to-day expenses, but also things like school fees and getting that leg into the property market has become very important. But I think that's also having implications for their longer-term financial security as well. We know that about one in two of them are also telling us that they believe they will have to work longer because of cost of living pressures on themselves and also this generosity. I think it also does have a big impact on wealth transfers. We know, for example, that women are more likely to share wealth than men with children and grandchildren. So the more that gets passed on, there's a generational shift coming, perhaps a little bit earlier in wealth.
I know I jumped straight into some of the more finer parts of the report, but overall now, how would you describe well-being at the moment, given it has recovered from a low point and why?
Yeah, it's substantially better, and it would want to be because, only 3 months ago, it was at the lowest point in the history of the survey. And that was surprising to some people, given that it was worse than it was when, a large percentage of the population went lockdown. I think what it really picks up is A, the resilience of people, but also the effort that's been required to be resilient. People aren't just grumbling about things. They've made some very real and tangible behavioural changes to their lifestyle, and that's impacted them. I also think while they're still highly concerned about things like cost of living, we noticed that fewer of them are reporting higher prices, so they're still seeing that. The other thing that's tangibly different is the optics around interest rates. So if I go back to the December quarter last year, 40% of the Australian population, they were not listening to economists who were saying rates were coming down. They believed that rates were going to steadily rise throughout this year. Now we have got one rate cut and people reframe their expectations. They needed a really tangible, visible demonstration that rate cuts were coming. They got one and they refocused and they started to believe the rate cut story. And I do think that's coming through. So I think people are still feeling, stressed about the cost of living, but they're telling us those pressures are dissipating.
And just finally, surely some parts of the community are feeling more stressed than others, though. Which parts exactly?
Yeah, and that's important because there was a collapse in well-being, which was broad-based, but particularly some groups we know are suffering more than others. The unemployed, people on lower incomes, younger people, renters in particular have a very different profile to other people. But having said that, the rebound in well-being has also been broad-based. Now, it does help if you're on a higher income, but lower income earners are also reporting more positivity. But you're absolutely right, the average does mask parts of the population who have been struggling disproportionately, who didn't have a savings buffer to draw down upon, who have had to really lean into those savings.
Dean Pearson there from NAB. Let's now take a closer look at the Australian share market. A great day. The S&P ASX 200 up 1.2% to 8,770. That is a new record. All 11 sectors ended higher. Consumer discretionary, the best performing sector, up 1.81%. And it means for the past 5 days, it's risen 3.3%. The best performing stock today was Credit Corp, up 16%. The worst performer, Telix Pharmaceuticals, down 8%. For more details, I spoke with Catherine Allfree, Portfolio Manager at Wavestone Capital.
I think the positive sentiment is because basically we had some poor economic news in the form of payroll data on Friday night, and then subsequently Wall Street initially sold off on that, and then last night rallied hard because they believe the Fed has to act now. They have to cut rates, whereas they've been on hold. And so therefore people think, great, we've got a weak employment market. And so therefore that gives them scope to cut.
Yeah, so given that, so if the Fed may need to cut rates, some saying perhaps faster than expected, we know that Donald Trump would like that. But what does it say about the US economy and perhaps the implication of tariffs?
I think the problem at the moment is we've got obviously the slowdown due to the uncertainty around tariffs, and also really how is the US consumer going to react to tariffs? Because it's about a $500 billion hit to the US economy. So the question is, how much of that will be shared or paid for by consumers? The rough estimate is around 60% of that. And so it's quite a bit of a hit to consumers, you know, across the board, even though there's obviously 360 million people living in the United States. So what people are concerned about is the fact that you've got that tariff uncertainty, but you've also got immigration. He's cut off immigration in the United States. And so therefore you have obviously on the supply side of the US economy, quite a tight market. And so to see such weak payroll numbers on Friday night was a real concern, because outside of the healthcare sector, the private sector actually went backwards in the United States. So it is concerning because, you know, I guess companies, rightly so, are sort of sitting on their hands going, hang on a minute, we can't work out which way this is going.
When you look at these types of events, so the slowdown in the US economy, to what extent does it concern you, though, as an investor?
It really concerns us because at the end of the day, the United States is the biggest economy in the world, right? And so therefore, a lot of our companies are exposed, a lot of investments are exposed to the United States. And we still believe that US economy has got all the right settings to continue its growth, despite what's happened in terms of the tariff hiccups. But if you look at it in terms of, you know, tech, arguably the best technology in the world, it's got such a strong profit motive. You know, the labour market is very flexible over there. And also they've got really cheap energy. So they've got all the ingredients for economic growth to continue over there quite strongly. And so we just think that this has been a patch of uncertainty, which we were sort of expecting some sort of impact from the tariffs. And finally, we're seeing it.
Okay, when you're looking at company news at the moment, there's lots of bits and pieces coming through. What are you following?
Well, today we've obviously starting to see reports coming out of companies. Today's was Credit Corporation, which is a debt ledger, debt collecting company, which is here in Australia as well as in the United States. And it was a better than expected result, mainly because last year was such a shocker. They had a lot of impairments in their result last year. So this year was a little bit better and the guidance was a little bit better. Other news that we're following is the telco sector. You've seen the restructure of TPG Telecom, and was a bit surprising there because we were all expecting the capital return, but no one was expecting that they would issue equity to reduce the debt within the company, but also allow the company to have more of a free float, which should support the company's growth going forward, because at the moment there's, you know, major shareholders on that register. So just going through the fine detail there, looking at that one. And then finally, Telix came out and said that their expenditures were going to be higher than expected outside of research and development than the market was expecting. And the market didn't like that. The stock sold off, 12%. It's been quite weak for a couple of months, but that therein lies the opportunity.
You mentioned Credit Corp there. Profit reporting season really will start ramping up in the next few weeks, right? What are you going to be looking out for?
Well, again, back to this US story, right? Because the question is that, in terms of economic growth, is the US going to be better than Australia? Australia, obviously, we've got to get this through this economic roundtable and see what the government's going to do. But in Australia too, we're waiting for rate cuts. And it'll be interesting to talk to the companies around how they see the consumer, because the consumer's been so sluggish now for a couple of years. But we've had two rate cuts. Hopefully, we're going to get more, and hopefully, we're going to see households starting to spend more. And we saw some data today around that was actually quite positive. First signs, car sales up, for example, 12%. So that's, positive. The consumer is finally opening their wallets after wage growth and, tax cuts, et cetera. So that'll be good to see, and that's what we'll be asking companies about. The other thing we'll be focused on heavily is AI and the future of AI and what that means for their, workforces, as well as what they're using it for and what they how they're utilizing it at the company level.
So finally, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Well, what's interesting is if you look at, 10-year averages of the market, across the market, all the multiples are trading, well high, and which you'd sort of expect that in terms of the market's trading at an all-time high. So we do have a bit of caution around sort of certain areas where there's a lot of overvaluation. There's quite a lot of speculative behavior happening in the market now, a lot of unprofitable companies getting, highly bid up. So that we just sort of have a little bit of caution, but we are hopeful that because of the rate cuts and the economic growth picking up, that you should start to see in 26 better earnings growth coming through, because we've had 3 years of really moribund earnings growth here in the Australian economy.
That's Catherine Orfrey there from Wavestone Capital, and it wraps up the podcast for this Tuesday. Don't forget, if you do enjoy it, to give it a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and to click subscribe. Tomorrow, will the markets continue on another record high, and we'll have the latest profit numbers. I think News Corp is out. We'll have all of that and more tomorrow. See you then.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.